Hey, and welcome to the Thrive Study broadcast. Very, very exciting to have Shabbos Kestenbaum joining us right now. Shabbos is at Harvard University and has an amazing story and really an inspiring student. Thank you, Shabbos, so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Could you tell a little bit of background first? How did you end up going to Harvard? Was it something that you had always dreamed of? How did you get accepted and what was that like?
Sure. So I come from a family of seven. My parents were not born in the U.S. They're from the U.K. and they moved here really to chase the American dream. So they were very proud of me when I got accepted to Harvard. My dad, he actually left high school when he was 16, and that was sort of the end of his formal education. So they were very proud of me. And then, of course, contrasting that just 2 years later, how disappointed they are in, of course, Harvard's actions or lack thereof as it pertains to Jewish students. I had gone to yeshiva. I was at Aish in Jerusalem for 2 years, really exploring religion, obviously from a religious perspective. But it got into my head that I wanted to study religion from an academic perspective, really just to hear that side, something that I wouldn't be accustomed to afterwards. And I applied, didn't think much of it, didn't really think I'll get in. And to make a very long story short, I actually found out I got accepted while I was in Auschwitz-Birkenau. I spent a lot of time in Poland doing research and connecting to the history there. So that's where I found out I got in. I started last year. Quite quickly, I realized that it wasn't what I was expecting, unfortunately, in a very negative way. There was pervasive, I would say, anti-Semitism and a lack of real intellectual discourse and rigor. And then certainly post-October 7th, it kind of just escalated.
What was it like when you got there? Were you excited about Jewish life there on campus, excited to be at Harvard and you were going to tolerate Jewish life on campus? What was your perspective in terms of Jewish life before we get into the other noise, unfortunately?
Yeah, so I definitely knew of Jewish life. I knew that there was a very strong Chabad, there was a very strong Hillel. My attitude was not necessarily that that's where I would accustom myself to being at for most of the time. I really wanted to ingrain myself within the university, connecting with non-Jewish students and non-Jewish peers. Even though I'm studying theology, and that obviously includes Jewish studies, I wasn't really expecting to be as involved in Jewish life as I became.
Okay. And you said even before October 7th, right, Simchat Torah, that you had already started feeling and seeing things that you couldn't really believe. What do you mean by that? What was the perspective overall at Harvard, both from staff and from students, in terms of how you felt being Jewish and how people reflected that towards you?
Sure. So I think what makes this story really concerning and distressing is the fact that we're talking about Harvard, which purports, proudly so, to train the next generation of American leaders, has a disproportionate amount of policymakers and those in power who are alums from the university. Literally, my first semester, really my first month, the fact that a rabid anti-Semite, Muhammad El-Kurd, who just 3 weeks ago at a rally in London said that we, quote, need to normalize massacres, he was invited to speak on campus. This is someone who said that Jews eat the organs of Palestinians, said that the Israeli occupying forces have internalized the ways of Nazi Germany. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of his anti-Semitism, so much so that the Anti-Defamation League has him on, you know, the top 10 anti-Semites of the world. And it was quite telling that not only was he invited to speak, but he was welcomed and celebrated by a really broad range of campus groups. And when Jewish students, myself included, peacefully protested and went to the administration saying, hey, you have a strong track record of not inviting racists or misogynists or homophobes. Why is there this exception when it comes to Jew haters? And we were met with shrugs. We were met with indifference. We were met with, well, there's not much we can do. And as I said, this was my first month. So that was really a rude awakening of the double standard.
Were you nervous to do this in the first month of being at Harvard, just to get involved in something, you know, fighting against the administration?
I don't know if I was nervous, but I certainly wasn't expecting to do it. And I also wasn't particularly happy that I was doing it because, as I said from the beginning, my plan at Harvard was not to fight anti-Semitism because I didn't really think about it. My plan was to pursue my research and to be in one of the most celebrated universities in the world. But as I said, quite quickly, it became this much bigger deal where, no, you actually do have to fight for the most basic of recognitions that, yeah, Jew haters should not be involved on campus. And I would also add that if you look at the lawsuit that we filed against Harvard, I'm the only named plaintiff.
One other thing I will bring up is that a very unknown statistic is that Harvard is actually ranked as one of the lowest free speech universities in the United States. Is that true?
Yeah, so there are two great statistics that people need to keep in mind. Both were published before October 7th. The first, as you just said, FIRE, which is a free speech institution, they rank universities in the United States based on free speech and intellectual exercise and debate. And they rank 248 universities as it pertains to free speech. And you could see their metrics online. And Harvard ranked the lowest when it comes to free speech. Another important publication that, again, was published way before October 7th was the AMCA Initiative. And the AMCA Initiative found that Harvard was number one when it came to anti-Semitic rhetoric and anti-Semitic attitudes on campus. So these things were published before October 7th. I make the case in the lawsuit, which we'll talk about later, that anti-Semitism was pervasive and known well before October 7th.
Why wasn't it known? Why didn't people talk about this? Again, the mainstream media didn't speak about this at all pre-October 7th.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Why were people not talking about these things early? Because it wasn't a secret. It sort of reminds me of this idea of if you're screaming at the top of your lungs and no one's listening, what else are you meant to do? We were screaming at the top of our lungs and no one was listening, whether it pertained to free speech or whether it pertained to Jew hatred. This was something that the university was not willing either to recognize and certainly not to do anything about. And that's why this lawsuit was so important. That's why coming on this platform and really spreading the word, not just to Jewish people, but to Americans of moral consciousness, just how pervasive and problematic Harvard has become in regards to anti-Semitism.
Let's shift to even more unfortunate situation. Obviously, we all know the tragedies here in Israel that have happened on Simchat Torah on October 7th. How have things changed at Harvard since then? You know, as a student, from a student perspective, how have they changed before you get to the steps that you have taken? Just what did you see?
I would even point out a flaw in that question, no fault of your own, is people often ask, well, post-October 7th, what it was like. We didn't even have a post-October 7th. We had, on the night of October 7th, real palpable change. What I mean by that is, as we were celebrating Simchas Torah, and of course, Jews were at the Hillel, were at the Chabad, and we're dancing, and slowly but surely, the numbers start to thin out. People are crying. There are all these rumors. I was told on Simchas Torah, which is something I would never have done otherwise, to contact my loved ones in Israel. I have siblings and cousins and grandparents, so I contacted them on Simchas Torah. And that night, as we were doing that, as Harvard Jewish students were trying to figure out where their loved ones in Israel were, we had 34 student groups representing hundreds and hundreds of students. Again, on the night of October 7th, jump out of their bed, as the New Yorker puts it, some of them still in their pajamas, to draft this, what they called emergency statement, where they blame the largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust on Jewish people. Again, this is the night of October 7th. This is while their fellow classmates, as I said, were trying to locate loved ones. So we didn't even have a post-October 7th. We had the night of October 7th students who were racing to put out the most anti-Semitic filth that I've ever heard. And then, of course, afterwards, we had student protests. We had classes interrupted. We had globalized the Intifada, free Palestine from the river to the sea. At one point, there was a protest where the speaker said, we have them, referring to Jews outnumbered. We have the numbers. So it really just began this whole wave of hatred and bigotry and discrimination, something that the university to this day has been unwilling or unable to do anything about.
Wow. And one of the things that obviously hit the news very strongly was everything that happened with Claudine Gay. And I heard that you were a little bit involved with what happened. So, you know, can you share a little bit about that as well?
Sure. So I'll start with the last point of your question. Many people, especially professors, will say the ouster of Claudine Gay is really because of these outside conservative activists, and it doesn't represent the student body, it doesn't represent how Jewish people feel. That is so absurdly not true. What gets lost in this discourse is the fact that 1,000 students, not just Jews, but 1,000 students wrote right after her congressional testimony that she should resign. We had the Harvard Jewish Alumni Association, which was created really in response to her failures. Again, over 1,000 people saying that she should resign. It had nothing to do with the plagiarism. It had nothing to do with outside conservative activists or Christopher Rufo or Bill Ackman. It had to do with Jewish students and non-Jewish students recognized that she was a disaster for this university. Look, I remember her inauguration. I was there, and I was actually really proud and recognized that this is an historical moment. This is the first Black female president. I took a selfie with her, but she abandoned us. This is entirely self-inflicted. This is someone who was under oath in front of Congress on live TV and refused more than 17 times to say that calls for Jewish genocide amount to disciplinary action. So if you're a Jewish student and you're hearing this, and we Jewish students were watching this live, we spent hours and hours watching this congressional testimony, we were horrified. How she was able to keep her job after that is beyond me and is a real study in the failure and crisis of leadership at Harvard. But I'm glad she's gone. It's a step in the right direction, but it does not in any way absolve the university of their systemic issues pertaining to anti-Semitism.
That was my next question, is do you think that actually her stepping down, do you think that solves anything that is going on in terms of the systemic issues at Harvard?
We know already that it hasn't. So for example, I said this on Fox News about a week ago. After her departure, almost immediately, we had students on a third-party app called SciChat, whereby in order to enter, you have to be a Harvard student. You have to show your credentials. So this is a site run for students by students. And on that site, we had students post that Jews have too much control over the media, that Jews are baby killers and pedophiles, that Jews are best friends with Jeffrey Epstein. And this was after her resignation. This is after she had already gone. We already have a new task force to deal with anti-Semitism, because the last one was so remarkably useless and accomplished nothing, they're going to make a second one. And that is led by someone who is a scholar and someone I respect greatly, but is also someone who has said repeatedly that claims of anti-Semitism at the university are grossly exaggerated. It's very difficult to ascertain whether Harvard is doing a good job at tackling anti-Semitism, whereby the very few metrics that we can measure it by, they clearly are failing at. So whether it's this new anti-Semitism task force, whether it's students saying anti-Semitic things, or whether it's the first day of classes in the spring semester just this last Monday to have every single Jewish hostage poster vandalized saying that Israel did 9/11, yeah, things are not great.
Wow, I have a tremendous amount of questions, but want to keep it a little short here. What are other initiatives that you're involved in at Harvard right now in order to try to make a difference? I heard that there's something that you mentioned before about this lawsuit.
Yeah, so with the lawsuit, I would add that it was not our first choice of action, right? We said from day one, we want to work with the administration. We want to tackle these issues head on. But Harvard's inability or unwillingness to engage meaningfully in constructive feedback at minimum or action at worst really made this lawsuit an imperative, unfortunately so. So what this lawsuit does is kind of twofold. Number one, it forces Harvard to recognize that they have failed to enforce their own school policies. When you had a situation a couple of years ago when admitted students were found out to have posted racist memes in a private group chat, Harvard immediately rescinded their acceptances, and they said quite firmly, we do not accept racism in any way, shape, or form at our university, right? When it came to people who are harassing Jewish students or people who are engaged in vehement Jew hatred, which is a violation of their own school policies, there has not been an equivalent or comparable disciplinary action. So number one, the lawsuit says you have failed to live up to your own standards. There's a double standard when it comes to Jewish students. Number two is Harvard has obligations under the Civil Rights Act, Title VI, which mandates that Harvard, or really any institution that receives federal funding, does not discriminate based on race, religion, sex, sexual orientation. So Jewish students are, of course, part of Title VI. And Harvard hasn't done anything to protect their Jewish students. So this lawsuit forces Harvard to recognize that reality. And if need be, which unfortunately it seems like it is, they will be obligated by a court of law to step up and to fulfill those obligations. I would also say that part of the lawsuit accomplishes, and I would argue has already accomplished, is raised a national conversation, has made people aware of just how ingrained anti-Semitism is at Harvard. And the public discussions and the national conversations that's been ongoing since this lawsuit has been a good step forward. It's not enough, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
What is it that you're suing Harvard for?
I mean, essentially, anti-Semitism. What that means on a practical level is when you give Harvard your tuition, you're agreeing to be part of a contract. So you give Harvard your money, and in exchange, they provide an education as well as a minimal amount of safety and guarantee that you can have an educational opportunity. And we've had diminished educational opportunities. They have reneged on their side of the bargain. So we're seeking, of course, damages just for the tuition that we pay and the fact that we've not been able to go to class, we haven't been able to focus, we haven't been able to pursue the research or all the things that we wanted to do when we got accepted to Harvard. And then number two, as I said earlier, it's to force Harvard to enforce their own policies and the obligations they have under the Civil Rights Act. So we're alleging that they've broken both of those things. They are not acting in good faith or within their legal obligations, and we will make sure through this lawsuit that they are forced to do just that.
Wow. Are you nervous about doing this right now? Can it potentially have a major impact on your grades in terms of your future? What's your perspective going full force forward with this while being at Harvard?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've already gotten one or two death threats, but that's sort of part of the course. I put it this way. I have nothing to be embarrassed about. I have nothing to apologize for. I didn't do anything wrong. And Jewish students didn't do anything wrong. We should not be penalized or intimidated or afraid by other people's bigotry and hatred and anti-Semitism. Am I apprehensive of the pushback? Yeah, of course. Because lots of people, unfortunately, on this campus are anti-Semitic, and they really are out to get Jewish people. At the same time, I'm very proud that I can play a very small role in elevating the discourse and providing Jewish students a space where they feel their voices are heard. And that's what this lawsuit does. I'm the only named plaintiff. There are six plaintiffs. I'm the only one who's named. And that's kind of twofold. That's because, number one, I'm at Harvard Divinity School, where I'm the only Orthodox Jew, and I'm one of like three pro-Israel Jews. So it'd be pretty obvious, even if I was anonymous, who that student was. But number two, much more fundamentally, is, as I said, I believe really strongly in our message. I really believe strongly in the fight that we are waging. And so, yes, a part of me says to be careful and to sleep with one eye open, so to say. My parents were very apprehensive and are very apprehensive of me being back on campus. But at the same time, as I said, I'm very comfortable and proud of my Jewish identity, and I want people to know that, and I have nothing to apologize for.
Very inspirational. We know in this past week's Torah portion, we just learned about Nachshon that jumped in, the man that jumped in, and we need leaders like you, Shabbos. In terms of cultivating leaders, maybe not at your level, but what we're all about is trying to recruit students to bring them to Israel for a semester abroad, training gap year students, Nitzavim students, to when they get onto college campuses, to do whatever they can. So we're trying to do our part as well. And I look forward to talking to you more about Nitzavim. But one thing that we are focused on in terms of study abroad is this new pledge campaign that, as a college student, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do for Israel. But one thing that only college students can do is based on this study from Brandeis, that if a person comes to Israel for over 4 months to Israel, they will be a leader for Israel forever. And what we're trying to do is, since study abroad is built into the academic calendar for many college students, we're trying to convince students that right now, as a Jewish college student, take a pledge that if I study abroad, Israel will be my number one destination, because Israel needs people right now. The Jewish people need people right now that are going to be able to stand up on college campus. Part of that is by coming here, helping rebuild Israel, helping develop a friend group and an affinity that they will then be the future for Israel and the Jewish people. And I wanted to get your perspective in terms of how can we get as many people as possible at Harvard and other people that you may know at different colleges, how could we get more and more people to take this pledge to ultimately come and study abroad in Israel? What do you think?
Had I not been in Israel for those 2 years, which was incredibly powerful and transformative and meaningful, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing now. I certainly don't think I'd be a named plaintiff on a lawsuit, but those 2 years in Israel really inspired me to live an authentic and meaningful Jewish life and to be proud for being Jewish. So I can speak personally on just how powerful a year or two or a semester in Israel is and the real change on the ground it has. So certainly I'm with you on the need and the importance of doing this. In terms of how we can get the message across, look, I heard about this organization a couple weeks ago. I signed the pledge. It took a minute. So it's not particularly difficult to do. But the main thing is just getting the message out there. I think at Harvard, especially when students are bombarded with different opportunities and research and travel grants and go here and go there, having people on the ground from your organization, physically, just meeting students face-to-face, being in those spaces at the Hillel, at the Chabad, at our cafeteria, having that personal connection is really important. I don't know what the budget is like or how money is spent, but certainly I would encourage your organization to think about how you can get the bodies in the room, how you can get the educators and the rabbis and leaders to meet these Harvard students and college students more generally where they are. Meet them in the classrooms, take them out after school, and show them and create a connection whereby they realize that this is a real opportunity for growth and a real opportunity for leadership. Because the program kind of sells itself, but it just needs that word of mouth.
As a regular college student, you think that the social media influencers and all of these things are very important, but ultimately there's nothing like having another student ambassador or just somebody paid on the ground to go show up at the Hillels, the Chabaz, and all these different things to get other people actively to sign something. And you personally think that that's the most important thing we should be investing in right now?
Yeah. I mean, 100%. Look, we all have social media and we all see different social media campaigns every other day. It's very difficult for something to leave a mark because we're just bombarded with any other opportunity you can think of. But it really changes the game when you have someone who is in front of you, who you have a relationship and a connection with, who you can speak to personally and physically, one-on-one. I think that is something that no social media campaign will ever be able to compare to. So yes, it's important, but as I said, it is nothing in comparison to having someone on the ground, meeting students where they are. That's pretty critical, I would say.
Thanks so much for your feedback and your advice. Just lastly, Shabbos, your story is very inspirational of what you're doing and that you are putting yourself, you're sacrificing yourself to a certain extent right now because for the purpose of the greater good. What would be your message to other college students that are there right now facing challenges similar to yourself? Why is it worth it right now to take a stand and to do as much as you can?
Wow, that's a deep question. Look, I think, first of all, I'm just playing a small role in this. I'm inspired by my fellow classmates and Jewish leaders who are also taking a stand against this. But what I would say to those across the United States, those Jews on college campuses who feel ostracized and isolated, that number one, don't be afraid. As I said, you have nothing to apologize for. You being Jewish is a tremendous privilege and a tremendous opportunity to do good, and you should never be embarrassed for that. On the contrary, you should be so proud and so grateful that you are Jewish, and reach out, whether that means reaching out to your local campus rabbi or a professor who you can ally yourself with, but don't be embarrassed, don't be afraid, you have nothing to apologize for. And while this is a very difficult moment for the Jewish people, out of this can and should and will become a greater sense of unity, of Jewish pride, and you have a network of thousands, if not millions, of like-minded individuals who are with you in that struggle and support you 100%. So don't be disillusioned by the negativity and the anti-Semitism you see. On the opposite, you should be inspired and you should stand tall.
Thank you very much for joining and for everything that you're doing on behalf of Israel, on behalf of all the Jewish people. Stay chazak and keep on doing your thing. Really appreciate it, Shabbos.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed, please share with others. To learn more about Israel's premier semester abroad experience for North American college students, visit thrivestudyabroad.org.